Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Good afternoon. How are you? Welcome along. It's Justin Briley here for Unbelievable, your weekly dose of cultural apologetics, theology, evangelism, debate, and listen to Around the World as a podcast. If you want to find more episodes from the show, going back over 10 years now on archive, premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. And there you'll find links to other ways to engage with the show, the app, the book, the event, the newsletter, and of course the video site too. Today's show is available on video over at our YouTube channel if you look for the Unbelievable YouTube channel. But I'll make sure there are links from today's show too. premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. Well, it's less than a month to go until Unbelievable the Conference 2019. Speaking truth in a post-truth world. We're doing it in association with our partners, ADF International and Biola Apologetics. Really looking forward to everyone who'll be joining us on Saturday, the 20th of July, along with 13 international speakers. Go and check out who's going to be speaking on what. We've published the full schedule now over at the website if you want to have a look at that. premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable and simply click through to the Unbelievable event. And don't forget, if you're a student, you get a discount. There's a group discount as well if you're coming with others. Free DVD when you book two or more tickets. So lots of good reasons to get yourself booked in right now. premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable and click through to the Unbelievable Conference event. Really looking forward to that in just 4 weeks' time now. And by the way, if you're out in the USA, we are going to be bringing the conference back to the USA this autumn. We haven't yet got the landing page up for that, hoping to do that very soon. But put in your diary the dates of the evening of Friday the 11th of October and all day Saturday the 12th of October. We're going to do a special kind of two-in-one with a debate on the Friday night and Unbelievable the Conference USA on Saturday at Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa. That's where we're holding our Unbelievable Conference USA this year in California. So I'm really looking forward to being able to announce full details of that and for you to be able to register. If you're a listener over on the West Coast, that's happening again, 11th and 12th of October. Well, exciting show for you today. One of the guests speaking on the show today, as you'll find out, is actually a speaker at this year's Unbelievable Conference here in the UK. We'll also be hearing some of your feedback to last week's show, which was also featured a representative from ADF International. Big response to our debate on abortion from last week. But let's get into today's discussion. You're unbelievable. Well, we're tackling a big cultural issue today. The sacking of Israel Folau. Was he guilty of a major foul or a victim of religious censorship? Israel Folau, if you're not familiar with him, is one of the world's best-known rugby players and a committed Christian. Well, earlier this year, he caused a huge stir in international rugby by sharing an image on his social media, which read, "Warning, drunks, homosexuals, adulterers, liars, fornicators, thieves, atheists, idolaters, hell awaits you. Repent, only Jesus saves." He then added, "Those that are living in sin will end up in hell unless you repent. Jesus Christ loves you and is giving you time to turn away from your sin and come to him." And shared that along with a variety of Bible verses. Well, that post ultimately led to Folau being fired by Rugby Australia for breaching its code of conduct around equality and discrimination. Folau has refused to retract the post and has since launched legal proceedings against Rugby Australia, saying that no Australian of any faith should be fired for practicing their religion. Well, other rugby stars have been drawn into the scrum, if you'll forgive the terrible pun. England star Billy Vunipola, who liked Folau's Instagram post, was given an official warning by his team and the RFU here in the UK, and has been booed by crowds when playing as well since that. And we're going to be talking today about this whole case, which is one among a number, in a sense, that pop up from time to time, where the lines between freedom of speech and hate speech are often drawn. Was Folau rightly sacked for being found guilty of hate speech, we're asking? Or is he, and even others like Vunipola, the victim of a new kind of censorship of freedom of speech and religion? Where do we draw that line when it comes to potentially offensive personal and religious views being expressed by public figures? Well, to help us think through this today, Nick Heath is with me. He's a rugby commentator, member of the Sports Media LGBT Network, and his video response criticising Israel Folau has gone viral. Lawrence Wilkinson also joins me from ADF International. He's a sports fan too, but believes Folau has been mistreated. He recently wrote an op-ed for The Spectator titled Israel Folau and the Right to Freedom of Expression. So welcome along, gentlemen, both to the show today.
Thank you very much.
Great to have you in studio with me. Let's come to you first of all, Nick. First time I've had you on the show, and Lawrence actually, but this is not something we cover frequently on my show, sports. But sports is where the latest controversy has happened, and so from the outset I should say I am no big follower of rugby, maybe like the big international games every so often, but I don't follow sport generally.
I was looking forward to your World Cup preview.
Well, yeah, you're not going to find it from me, I'm afraid. Much better qualified people right here in the studio to do that. But obviously, and most of the time, I'm guessing you don't get drawn into issues around religion and freedom of speech and that kind of thing. You're happy to keep to just doing what you
absolutely
enjoy, sports and commentary and so on. So tell me what inspired you to specifically get involved and put out that post, which maybe you could describe for listeners exactly what you said in response to this whole controversy.
Yeah, it was off the back of what Izzy, as he's known, Israel Folau, had put out. He, a year before, had replied to a question on Instagram from one of his followers when they'd said, what is God's plan for gay people? And he had said, if they don't repent for their sins, then they'll go to hell. And that created a fair amount of response at the time, and I think Rugby Australia felt the need to remind him of his responsibilities as a high-profile athlete. So then you move on a year down the line, he's been fairly well-behaved. There's almost not a lot of communication coming out from any of his social media channels, and then he sort of hits both barrels. Suddenly there's a tweet, and then there's the Instagram post, which you've gone through the details of. And there began a reaction to that. Then, as you mentioned, Billy Vunipola, the English rugby player, number eight, one of the best in the world, likes the post. There's a lot of, you know, reaction to what that like means. Mm-hmm. And you know, I defend Billy's right to kind of like whatever he wants to like, and to not have his belief system come under attack. And I don't support any of the booing and the stuff that happened to him, because I think that was entirely unfair. As a teacher of my 18-year-old nephew messaged me, he said, we have an issue sometimes at school with kids these days, because their need and the prevalence of social media is such that if all of their friends are posting on a daily basis, they scroll through Instagram and like every post that their friends have put up.
So without even reading it.
Sometimes. No, exactly. Without any endorsement. Mm-hmm. And I spoke recently to a young guy I was playing a rugby tournament with, and I said, "What's it like for you? Do you think about what you're pressing a like to?" And he said, "Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't." So there was an awful lot.
So it's
lot
hard to judge exactly the motives of Billy
what was being read into that.
And so on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure.
But Billy then accompanied it with a supporting post of his own, which then included a little bit more, you know, from the Bible, I think it was. And you know, he then, whatever phrase it was, he then sort of went on to make a point
essentially,
about...
I mean, Lawrence, perhaps you can fill in the gap here, but as far as I'm aware, he essentially said, I love everyone, but I do believe that basically sort of marriage is for men and women, and there's a kind of purpose for that. And that's my belief as a Christian, I think, is essentially
it was something along those lines. Yeah, absolutely. And so for me, you know, I felt that these are two high profile sports people who are expressing views that are ultimately, you know, infringing on my rights as a gay man to believe that, you know, I'm living a life that is without choice in terms of who I am. I didn't choose to be gay. I think it's something that you're born with. I think you know, that's the key element of all of this for me. And so my outlook on it was, particularly on that meme that Izzy posted, that you've got your fornicators, atheists, thieves, idolaters, and everybody on there. The only one for me really that sticks out is homosexuality, because it's not something you might choose to do. Now, I've also incidentally had people contact me and say, well, actually, alcoholism isn't something you can, you know, you choose, it's a condition. You know, is there a counter argument to say, well, you choose one day to have your first drink? So anyway, that's another conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was about what is choice. And, and I felt that because this wasn't something that people choose, and ultimately Izzy and Billy were, well, who knows about Billy, but they were putting these messages out, I felt a need to respond. I thought I could sit here and write a 2 or 3 hour article, or I could press record and put a 2 minute video out, which is what I chose to do, just saying, you know, I've had enough of people telling me I need to repent for my sins.
That was your response, and obviously you've got every right to put that out. Do you feel as well that Rugby Australia took the right decision to sack?
That decision is based on their code of conduct and whether Israel broke that, and they believe he did. I believe he did from what I can read on their code of conduct. So I think, yeah, they were right to dismiss him.
Yeah. Just on a personal level, do you think rugby will be losing a big sort of name and a big sort of
absolutely
piece of talent in that way?
And Australian rugby has not been in the greatest of states of the classic teams that we've seen over 20, 30 years, and it's desperately sad that we won't have him at Rugby World Cup 2019 in Japan. He would have been, you know, one bloke can't change a game, but he you know, would certainly have done an awful lot to have helped the Australian cause, and it will be a shame that he's not there, but he's broken a contract of employment with his employers, and therefore they needed to take action.
Okay. So you've been following this story quite closely, Lawrence, as well. Perhaps just before we dig into that, you could explain sort of what you do with ADF International, which, as I understand it, is essentially a sort of advocacy organisation around things like religious rights and freedom of speech and that kind of thing. So I guess this sort of comes within your remit of these kinds of issues of when people do and don't cross certain lines. Yeah, and so on.
Exactly. And I think for me it was an interesting situation, because it's not often that my work also engages rugby.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, great. You know, not great.
You're a rugby fan yourself.
Yeah, massive rugby fan. So I was saying to Nick earlier, I grew up in Zimbabwe, and I played rugby at school. I wasn't very good at it. I think I cracked the 15 towards the end of my amazing career there and didn't do very well. But no, I'm a massive fan. I've been fortunate enough to go and see some, you know, World Cup games. And I think, you know, when I first saw the headlines about what Folau had posted, I assumed, crumbs, he said something pretty big here. It's going to be, you know, something of the lines of, you know, all gays are going to hell, or something very kind of direct, you know, pointing at gay people and kind of singling them out and saying, this is, you know, an unacceptable way of living, or something like that. I think the way that it was covered kind of made me raise my eyebrows and think, crikey, Izzy, what have you done here? So it was surprising then to go on and see the post itself. And I think from my understanding, I think there's been a lot of documents leaked from the tribunal as well. So we actually have a fairly good understanding of what kind of was going on at the time that Izzy made the post. But as I understand it, he saw news of a law in Tasmania that kind of allowed you to change your gender on demand. I think that's what he'd seen, and he was quite upset by that. I think, as he said, you know, I don't think I think he said that essentially, in his view, from a biblical perspective, that wasn't on, and so he put something out on social media about that, and then followed it up with this post. And I think he put a fair bit of thought and effort into what he was going to post, given the controversy he was involved in last year. And I think for him, the kind of safest approach was to be to post something from the Bible.
Right.
And actually, if you look at the Instagram post itself, it's a screenshot photo of a meme. I mean, who knows where he found it? But I think he said that kind of summarized his view at that point.
And the quote itself that was on the post wasn't exactly an exact Bible quote, but it could be argued it's a sort of a summary of certain passages of the Bible.
Yeah, I mean, a very, very close summary of 1 Corinthians 6, I think.
Right.
And so in that sense, I think he was wondering how to express his views on everything, and thought, right, well, I'm going to go with kind of the closest, the safest option.
But in your view, Nick, he must have been fully aware that there were potentially consequences given what had happened a year earlier.
And how quiet he'd been up to that point.
Right. So you think he was fully aware that he was probably opening up a big hornet's nest in posting that?
I struggle to believe that someone could be that all-knowing and that aware and continue to go ahead and do that. So it raises a question to me as to how aware or intellectual Izzy Folau is to go ahead and do something like that if he knows what the consequences are going to be. I think there are ways of expressing yourself that don't need to come across as that did.
It sounds like you, Lawrence, are saying you're not certain actually it was quite the expression that it's been painted as in the media.
I don't think so. And I think it's interesting. There's a really interesting interview with Nick Farr-Jones, who's a former Wallabies captain. And I think he initially came out and said, you know, I wasn't very supportive of Izzy. And then he reached out to me, sat down with me for a number of hours, and we talked through it. And as far as Izzy was concerned, he did not understand that that was going to blow up in the way that he did. And I'm guessing it's because it was kind of scriptural from that perspective. It's like if I'd kind of singled them, you know, gay people out specifically and written my own thing about it, perhaps. But
Nick, your point here is you do think it pertains to sexuality more than the other items listed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that, you know, in your Spectator piece, you said, why is this being, you know, principally characterised as being anti-gay? And, you know, where are all the outraged fornicators and atheists? Do you not understand the idea that of all of those things, sexuality is the one thing that seems to be more based on who you are, not rather the choices you make?
I think this is the crux of the issue right here. And I think it depends on whether you take the view that that post kind of says if you are kind of homosexual in the sense that you are same-sex attracted, like you are inherently sinful. I think the orientation is
the sinful thing.
Exactly.
If that's what's being said, that's wrong, then that may not be something people can choose, obviously.
Exactly. So James Haskell, who's also commented on, I think his view was, I mean, essentially this is the same thing as saying if your skin colour is white, you're a sinner and you're going to hell. I mean, that's how he put it. I mean, would you agree with that position?
Well, I think the lack of choice element of it to me is as paralleled with being born black or white, brown, grey, green, whatever.
Sure.
So I think
it's a good analogy.
It does stand up in that sense. Yeah.
So I mean, I have two issues with that. The first is that I think that it's not as black and white as that. I think the crux of that, and if you look at all the behaviors listed, it's not, you know, if you are attracted to women, you know, before you're married, that's a sin in and of itself, right? Does that make sense? So if you are if you're married and you find women attractive, that is not sinful in of itself.
But if you act on
the
that,
the conduct.
It's the acting. So I mean, this is where we kind of get into the rather sort of specifics of how do you interpret a specific Bible passage.
Yeah.
And he wasn't even, strictly speaking, quoting a Bible passage. But I have heard it put this way, Nick, and I'll just see what you make of this, that those sorts of passages in the New Testament, there's a couple of them basically where these certain number of sort of things are listed as and the wording probably is more specifically will not inherit the kingdom of God or something.
Yeah.
And generally speaking, I see a lot of commentators would say the best translation of that is something like homosexual offenders, and that would mean not someone who is necessarily oriented that way, but someone who acts upon that and takes part in same-sex activity. And that's been that, and a lot of Christians
want
to distinguish.
Why is there a difference between orientation and acting on it? I think
Lawrence, is that the point you're trying to make about if someone is married and is attracted to other women, it's about whether they act on it.
I think that message basically will speak to everyone in a sense and say, like, you are going to limit your ability to freely express yourself in the way you might wish to. Now, I hear your point absolutely. I think to you, and again, it'd be interesting to hear from you exactly how that spoke to you, because I think from my understanding of what you said in that very kind of passionate, eloquent, you know, piece on Twitter, you said, listen, this is the only thing that says, like, in who I am, like, I am going to hell no matter what I do. Like, there is no hope for me at all but to go to hell. That's basically what Falau was saying to me. Falau was like, you're toast, mate. You're going to hell. And I understand why that's infuriating. My issue is I don't think that's what he's trying to say. I don't think that's the message of his post. And I think if that was the message of his post, you'd be absolutely justified in your outrage. I completely understand that.
But your perception of that is as a pretty well-educated, learned fella, and he's putting that sort of message out there where there are a lot of people that may not have that sort of take on it. And therefore, you know, it's not about whether it affects me personally. You know, I was 18 years a Catholic, and my faith has kind of withered since then. But so it doesn't bother me if he thinks I'm going to hell or not. That doesn't affect me. But in my view. But it's the harm it's doing to those 12, 13, 14, 15-year-old kids in Australia, let's say, or across the world, that are struggling to come to terms with their sexuality and may have a faith or may not have a faith. But either way, their role model, their idol, is telling them that they're going to hell. And for, you know, I don't know how broad I'm allowed to be about Christian values.
You can be as broad as you like.
This is an open forum.
They sit, for a lot of great friends I've got with very strong Christian faiths, who turn around and say, it's just, and as I said in my video, is it a nice thing to say? Is it a nice thing to do? I was going to say,
I've seen a lot of different Christian responses to this.
Yeah, okay. I've seen
Christians who say, I cannot, you know, that's utterly repugnant to me.
Yeah.
And that may be because they absolutely think there's nothing wrong with being gay and being in a gay relationship. Mm. And they'd say, so Israel Falau is a very different kind of Christian to me, and so on. There's other Christians who I would say actually are pretty conservative and would say, actually, I do happen to believe that marriage is male and female. But I think the way Izzy did that was really bad, and this is not the way you have that kind of a conversation, and so on. And then you've obviously got people who are fully behind Izzy and the way he did it and everything. Mm. But I find a lot of people in that middle camp who are kind of torn, because they're saying, on the one hand, I don't agree with the way he said this, but I do support his right to have those beliefs.
But do you think that there's an issue here in terms of, obviously, there are various levels of belief, as you've described there, and I agree. I've had similar people saying, he doesn't speak for me, and I have a strong faith, what have you. And I think, you know, Brian Moore wrote a piece about saying, is part of the crux of this problem the book and the Bible itself, bearing in mind it's translated from Hebrew to Aramaic to Latin and then into various other languages. It's as old as it is, and some people use it as a moral structure to their lives, and other people go to it absolutely word for word when we're living in 2019. Now, many people have highlighted the various other things that are in the Bible that Izzy doesn't seem to be subscribing to, like having tattoos and the various bits and pieces. So when there's such a broad spectrum of how you take one particular text, it seems it's always going to provoke a fairly messy scenario.
What do you make of that, Lauren?
Yeah, no, I mean, so here's the thing. Are we agreed that it is the position of many Christians that ultimately engaging in homosexual conduct is sinful? I mean, I think that is a question. Is that position? Now, I think we can have a discussion on whether, you know, from a more external perspective, well, is that loving? Is that nice? Is that kind? All those things, sure. But from a theological, I guess, basis, is that, you know, what Christians believe is and perhaps is that acceptable? Now, the bottom line is there are various views within the church on a number of interesting topics. I mean, the death penalty is one. Abortion is another. I mean, we could speak for days about all of them. But to me, one of the most interesting things is I think a lot of people will usually go to the Old Testament and go to Deuteronomy, Leviticus, and say, listen, you Christians, don't think you can come to work with your clothes which are made of two types of wool, because that's clearly, you know, prohibited in Leviticus. And so the tattoos question is another interesting point, and I'd like to come back to that, because again, I think there's an element to what you're saying is like, Falau is a hypocrite, so he shouldn't be saying anything towards anyone else because he's kind of in the wrong himself. And I think we need to get to that. But what I'll say is this. I think, you know, specifically looking at Leviticus, Deuteronomy, and kind of the law that was intended for the Israelites in the Old Testament and, you know, is still observed by Orthodox Jews today, You know, a lot of Christians will have a theology on that, that was a set of rules intended for those people at that time. And that after Jesus came, kind of there was a transformation in the way that the law applied. Essentially, the law in the Old Testament showed Christians that they could never fulfill the law. And again, this is a whole other theological conversation which we could spend a lot of time on. We won't go there. I mean, the basic example is, you know, Peter saying, I think, you know, after Jesus left, not being able to eat animals with cloven feet. Mm. And he had a vision, and basically all these animals with cloven feet came down, and Jesus said, it's good, you can eat it now, it's fine, the law's been
given. About 50 years we won't be eating them anyway, so it's,
well, yeah, I mean, exactly. So I think I hear you in the sense that, listen, this is an issue that has divided a number of Christians. But for me, the interesting thing is I know a lot of Christians who would say, listen, I'm same-sex attracted. And for me, I felt that was the most important aspect of my personality. And some of them were really distraught about it. And they said, I don't know how I can reconcile this attraction that I have with my faith. And it denies me my ability to potentially get married, to you know, have that person that I can love in the way that it, you know, guys can love women in the heterosexual world. That's fine. I'm not ever going to have that. But what they've said is, looking at the scriptures, I cannot justify that position. I cannot come to a place where actually I can get around that argument. And they have skin in the game. I don't. Izzy doesn't have skin in the game on that one, because he's got nothing to lose. But if they can say that, I'm much more inclined to listen to them and say, okay, well, if you've said that you're willing to give up kind of your right to live out your sexual orientation in the way that you would wish because you're pursuing something else. Mm-hmm. And here's the key with the Falau quote. Like, the picture listed a bunch of sins and was kind of a warning thing. And frankly, I don't think it was particularly well advised to put it out there. I don't think that's the best way to engage these issues, to be perfectly honest. I mean, Nick Farr-Jones said the same thing. He's like, well, I wouldn't do it like that. Mm. Because I think it does raise such deep issues. Instagram is not the way to deal with these things. But the text, he basically said that the fullness that we're looking for in giving up all of these things. And as I say, I think if you look at that list, everyone has something that they give up on that, perhaps more so than others. I'm not gonna concede that.
I mean, as I understand it, then you is it almost as though you're saying if Izzy can't put something like that up, which is essentially a kind of a summary of a Bible passage, then we're effectively saying you can't share bits of the Bible.
Yeah, and I think
you can't. Is it like
that's
you know,
that's the other point?
That's a
it's like
big deal.
Exactly. So if he can't put up that post, okay, fine. And actually, from a contractual basis, Rugby Australia could have said, listen, mate, here's the deal. You're going to sign a social media addendum, and in that, you will not post anything about your religion. Right? Not going to happen. If you do, we can sack you. I think ASICS, who also sacked him, I'm pretty sure in their contract they had a very clear contractual basis for doing that. And of course, that's a much more personal contractual relationship. It's with Izzy himself as opposed to kind of Rugby Australia.
This was his sponsor.
This was his sponsor, exactly. Okay, sorry. Right, so, he also lost his sponsor in the wake of this. Yeah. You know, that's one aspect of it there. But in terms of him being able to limit his rights within his kind of professional world, social media, that's one thing. But what if, for example, he was in his church and giving a sermon, and there was a journo there, and they went and asked him a question on this, and he gave him, you know, a straight answer on that, you know, to essentially summarizing what he put on Instagram. Is that also wrong? Should he not be saying that?
Yeah,
I'm going to get you to answer that after a quick break.
Okay.
Nick, we'll come straight back to you. Would the same have applied if it was a different kind of circumstance? We're talking about Israel Folau. His sacking, guilty of a major foul or a victim of a certain kind of religious censorship over this whole Instagram and Twitter post that he got in trouble over. So we'll be continuing this discussion on the rights and responsibilities around what we say and how our religion, our religious views play into that. My guests today are Nick Heath, rugby commentator, and Lawrence Wilkinson from ADF International. We'll be back in a moment's time.
Christians, we face great challenges in our day. Fake news, skepticism, disbelief. Friends, join the revolution. Speak truth to a post-truth world.
Do you want to share your Christian faith with confidence? Do you want to speak truth in a post-truth world? If so, don't miss Unbelievable The Conference 2019. in partnership with ADF International and Biola Apologetics. Join me, Justin Briley, and over 10 world-class speakers, including Krish Kandaya, Christy Mayer, and Bruxy Cavey. Rediscover the reasons for the hope you have and find the confidence to share it boldly. Unbelievable the Conference 2019, Saturday, the 20th of July in London. Book now at premierchristianradio.com/speakingtruth.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Welcome back to this week's edition of the programme. We don't often talk sports on Unbelievable, but a certain story within the world of sports has meant that I think there's something that we need to talk about when it comes to faith, how we express it, what the limits are of what we say in the public sphere. Israel Folau, and apologies to our American listeners to the podcast who may be less familiar with this story than people on this side of the pond. This is not American football. This is rugby, the original and the best, I'm sure. Both my guests would agree.
It's American football without pads.
I'm leaving you all alone with that comment.
I may have opened up a whole new can of worms there. But we're talking about the comments that Israel Folau, one of the world's best known rugby players, and one of the best rugby players in the world, I'm sure you'd agree, what he said in talking about drunks, homosexuals, adulterers, liars, fornicators, thieves, atheists, idolaters, hell awaits you, repent, only Jesus saves. This picture he posted that has led to him being sacked by Rugby Australia. And we're asking, was that right? Where does the boundary lie when it comes to people expressing their personal and religious views? Nick Heath, rugby commentator, member of Sports Media LGBT Network, is with us. Lawrence Wilkinson from ADF International, who has defended Folau's right, even if he doesn't necessarily defend the way he did it, and so on. And in that last section, Nick, Lawrence was simply posing you the question, but look, what are the circumstances where this would or wouldn't count? Can he speak freely, answer a question freely, like in a church sermon, something like that? Does his role as in the public sphere mean that he cannot say these sorts of things in any capacity? What's your views on?
I think he can say these things in certain capacities, and I think the key is how you're doing this. The meme he put on Instagram was pretty out there in terms of warning. It was done like it was a kind of radioactive warning on a machine. It was that kind of sign. It looked like that. And within the meme is you know what was written about, you know, hell awaiting drunks, homosexuals, adulterers, liars, fornicators, thieves, and idolaters. I note that Lawrence had put in his blog post on The Spectator that, you know, the words Folau wrote to accompany the post don't mention sexuality at all, which I felt was quite deliberately obtuse, really, right, because it's fairly obvious within the post that there is a fairly hefty point being made. But if you were at a press conference, if I was sat in that room and I said, Izzy, what are your thoughts on gay people? If he turned around and said, you're asking me a question about my religion, mm-hmm, I'm willing to answer you, but I'd like to preface that by saying, mm, I have, and I know he said, I'm friends with many gay people and whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, I respect their right to live. My personal view through my religion is that they will have to repent for their sins to avoid going to hell. Mm-hmm. But that is my view. It's my personal held belief. Mm. And I still wish them a long and happy life. But this is how things are. Then he's been asked about his belief. He's qualified what he says. He's done it with an element of generosity to the fact that these are other people's lives that they're living. And that wouldn't be as offensive. But right, but it is the method and the way in which he's done this on a very public, mm-hmm, in a very public way, in a very sensationalist way, that for me is the crux of the issue. And it is on social media, and it is under employment with Rugby Australia, who have a code of conduct which, mm-hmm, he's broken.
I find that really interesting, because actually for me it's almost more egregious to talk about it in a press conference than on social media personally, because I feel that that's more of an area where he's representing the game, like, you know, potentially in Wallabies tracksuit, potentially with the Qantas, you know, sponsor on his logo on his chest, which is the main sponsor of Rugby Australia. So, you know, I think this is an interesting point, because actually, you know, There are expressions of this which I think no one would disagree are absolutely unacceptable and clearly breach the code of conduct. For instance, you have Nigel Owens, very prominent gay referee, very good referee, usually referees the final. And if, you know, Folau was going to play a game and found out that Owens was officiating and went, ooh, well, actually, he's gay and so he's a sinner. And so I can't actually play in this game. I mean, that's a no-brainer.
But would Folau have that outlook?
Because, no, absolutely not. But I think this is the way that he's been portrayed. I think people are basically portraying him as someone who hates gay people to his core. This is Izzy. Izzy at his core is a hateful guy. He hates gay people, and he just wants to promote that message. Reading the headlines, that's kind of the impression that you get.
Yeah, no, I've been asked the question, you know, do you think that he's homophobic? And there are quite a few people out there who, in interpreting what's gone up, are choosing a very easy, short leap to make in theory to say, well, obviously he must be, or he's got his own issues, or whatever. And frankly, I don't know the answer to that, but I respect his, you know, everyone's gone on about whether this is a freedom of expression issue, and I don't think it is. You can still have freedom of expression, but you can't necessarily be free of the consequences of that. And therefore, the consequences while you're in a contract of employment with somebody who has encouraged you not to do that under their values, therefore you're in a situation where your employment can be terminated.
What about the Billy Vinopola aspect of this? Because that was an interesting sort of sub-story. Another major rugby player likes the post and gets in trouble simply for the liking. Now, you said you're not there to judge his motives as to exactly why he chose to like that Instagram post. He did obviously post a clarification of sorts. Is your worry, Lawrence, that this is kind of like the even expressing support in any form for that kind of view of sexuality is now inadmissible, is not essentially people can't say anything or express any kind of support in that way?
Well, I think what Nick has just said really, you know, is a very reasonable approach. I think what he's asking for is a kind of clarifier, and making it really clear, like, listen, this has got nothing to do with the sport. This is my personal view. And I think you basically wanted to see the way that was expressed done in a much more sensitive, understanding way.
Like you said, Nick Farr-Jones saying, that's not what I would have said. It's not how I would have done it. And if you do it in that way, then you're gonna reap the consequences.
So here's where I think the trouble for me, and let me be clear, I don't think it was a helpful way to engage the issue at all. But I think that Rugby Australia's response has been completely disproportionate, and I think Nick Farr-Jones agrees with that.
Just for my benefit, who is Nick Farr-Jones?
Sorry,
because I don't know the
Nick
people.
Nick Farr-Jones is the he's a former Wallabies captain, I think World Cup winning captain in 91. So he's a big deal
and
in Australian rugby.
And he knows Izzy well.
No,
doesn't know.
Didn't know him at all before this post.
But they've had a conversation.
Originally, I think he kind of came out and was kind of unsure about what was going on. He might have even condemned it. I'm not sure initially, but had a conversation with him and walked away from that conversation being really angry with the way that Rugby Australia were dealing with it. And as I say, he's like, listen, I'm not on social media for this very reason. I don't think it's a helpful way to engage these issues. But here's the thing. And as I say, a number of things have come out they've been leaked. Izzy apparently is very unhappy about the fact that they've been leaked. But looking at how this whole situation was dealt with by Rugby Australia. Now, one of the things that really concerned me was the day after the post, the day after Rugby Australia came out and said it is our intention to terminate his contract right straight away. And then I think 2 or 3 days later, you had his club and national captain, Michael Hooper, saying, what did he say? It was basically like...
Well, he said it would be difficult, I think was the phrase he used.
Difficult to play with him.
I mean, the Rugby Australia statement that came out sort of 24, 36 hours after the initial post was also off the back of them trying to contact him all that time via his agent, via his family, and there was no response forthcoming. So they were like, well, look, we're not getting the chance to talk to you about this, so just so that you know where we stand on this, this is our intention. Whether that's the right thing to do or not is obviously up for debate, but that I understand was the motivation for doing it because we're not getting a response.
Okay, fair enough. But even then, Checker coming out kind of, you know, 3 days later saying, right now, I'm not gonna pick him for the Wallabies. You know, this is a World Cup hit year. Again, you know.
And so, do you feel like he was sort of put on trial and the judgment was weighed before he was ever really given a chance to explain in that? Well, is that why you're raising?
So
that,
here's that? The thing: I think if you look at those statements, right, and you look at how they've dealt with it, and you say, right, they've stated straight away that they're intending to terminate the contract. You have his club and national captain saying it's going to be difficult to take the field with him. You've got his national coach saying I'm not going to pick him. Right, the guy hasn't even explained where he's come from, what he's doing. I mean, they pushed the nuclear button pretty quickly.
But Michael Hooper, as a teammate, is entitled to look at that post he's put up and say, I'm going to find it difficult.
Sure.
And his and the captain of the coach of the national side is entitled to say, well, you know, I'm probably not going to pick him if those are the sort of things he thinks it's appropriate to put in the public sphere.
And they can say that, but I think, you know, for me, what it says is they've leaped there kind of to the end game, which is he's not going to play for the Wallabies again. I think it was pretty clear from that point he wasn't going to play for the Wallabies again. If you look at how everything folded out from there. And I think it was interesting because when you look at what happened, so the Wallabies said it's our intention to terminate him. They terminated the contract and said, Folau, you can either accept this termination or you can refer it to a tribunal. He referred it to a tribunal. He had a 3-day hearing. Mm-hmm. And the tribunal kind of essentially upheld the decision, said, you know, Rugby Australia is within their rights to sack him. And so on the back of that, Rugby Australia sacked him. He then had the option to appeal that decision. But he said, I'm not going to do that because I don't think I'm being treated fairly or lawfully by Rugby Australia. And at that point, he jumped to the main court system.
And in your view, do you think he has a case? He said no Australian of any faith should be fired for practicing their religion. So Izzy obviously sees this as a case of religious discrimination. Yep. So do you think that this looks like that in your view?
He has a case. So here's Lawrence. The thing. It's going to boil down to his contract. And as I said, he's a professional sportsman. He's making $1 million a year to play a sport. And he is perfectly within his rights to sign away whatever rights that he wants to in terms of being able to express his religious beliefs. So there is potentially kind of a higher area of law. You know, on top of that, you might have, you know, in Europe, you have the European Convention, and that kind of prevents you from kind of prevents the government from restricting religion in certain ways. But in that sense, he could have written away all of his rights. And I, looking at the wording of the code of contract, looking at the wording of the code of conduct, I don't see a clear option for them to sack him.
Shall I do a bit of housekeeping and read it out?
Go ahead. Feel free.
I brought a copy with me. So the Code of Conduct 1.6, do not make any public comments that would likely be detrimental to the best interests, image and welfare of the game, a team, a club, competition or union. 1.7, use social media appropriately. Do not use social media to breach any of the expectations and requirements of you as a player contained in the code. 1.8, do not otherwise act in a way that may adversely affect or reflect on or bring you, your team or club into disrepute. And then 1.3, which is probably the key one here, treat everyone fairly with dignity, regardless of sexual orientation. And for me as well, that argument about him taking on Rugby Australia because he feels he should be free to practice his religion, I don't think anyone's stopping him practicing his religion. He's broken a code of conduct based on what he's expressed whilst under the employment of somebody. Now, he's not being told he can't continue to go and express and be religious in whatever way he wants to. And that, for me, is an argument that's been conflated by some of the Pacific Island nations and representatives as well, have said, well, look, we've all got a very strong faith. So are you telling us all that we now can't express our views and our faith? So, no, you absolutely can. Of course you can. But when you sign up to a code of conduct that has these things,
I suppose that the key will be when someone has a very strong faith and wants to express it, you know, in their social media or whatever. I imagine if, you know, no one would probably have objected if Izzy had put on "I love Jesus," you know, "Hallelujah,"
100%. Like
that. Okay, yeah. But it's kind of when do you cross that line? And which issue is it that's controversial enough? You know, if Izzy had expressed a very particular view on abortion, say, would that be the one that kind of it gets him in trouble? If he had expressed a very particular view on you know, any number of issues,
yeah.
And obviously that's the kind of thing which will ultimately someone else is going to decide, you know, ultimately. In this case, it's Rugby Australia who said, actually, this one went too far. So what does that mean? Does that mean that essentially your employer at that point is saying, you can say this much, but not this much? This is when your Christian, you expressing this aspect of your Christian faith becomes offensive in a way that we have to take action.
Yeah, I think it's when these things are stepping outside of what is expected of the values that we have entrenched, and that are values that we as an organisation stand up for, and within the code of conduct, the sort of things that I mentioned. I should mention Ben Cisneros is a guy who writes a website called Rugby and the Law, and he put a piece up in the last couple of days where he was looking, based on English law, not on Australian, and I wouldn't know the difference, and maybe Lawrence can fill in the gaps, but he was going through the various potential cases as to how Israel's appeal now could look, and whether he would be going on a wrongful dismissal claim. He was saying, looking at the code of conduct, Ben argued on his website that he broke the code very publicly, and so that he would probably lose on that basis. Was it unfair dismissal? Well, there was deemed to be no predetermination based on the fact that the appeal panel was completely independent, and there was also then whether it was discrimination directly or indirectly, and his argument was it's based on the code of conduct, not on his actual beliefs, which is what we're talking about here, as to whether it's whether you can continue to believe what you believe, or whether it's about how you express it, which is kind of what we were saying a little while ago.
Well, no, I've read the blog, and I disagree with it, frankly. And again, this is lawyers, all they do is argue.
Well, yeah.
But there's two reasons why. The first one is, I think he essentially made the argument that there's no justification for what he said. So particularly within the European context, and again, he argued it from an English law perspective, which is kind of inapplicable to Izzy's situation. I don't know exactly what arguments he'll be advancing, but he's not going to be arguing the English law position. But essentially, he said there's no justification for that, what he said. He also said, you know, sexual orientation is immutable, you know, like skin color, and basically the content of what he said was hateful, prejudicial, all the rest. And he referred to two other cases. One was a guy who essentially was fired for expressing a view on Facebook as to whether marriage should be between a man and a woman, or it could be extended to a man and a man, and he was fired on that basis. And I don't think he did a good enough job of distinguishing why that was separate. But
I was going to say this is and Australia has only recently in a sense done this, gone through their own process of putting gay marriage into law. And it strikes me that again, I saw a number of stories of individuals either for or against that as the debate was taking place, and by and large would it be the case that if you were a rugby player and you expressed support for gay marriage, that would be uncontroversial, and you would be, you know, essentially praised for that? And if you didn't, if you said, no, I'm against this going into law, that would potentially be a kind of disciplinary issue. And at that point, aren't you saying to people, you have to take a particular view on this if you're going to work for us?
Yeah, there are interesting questions in there, and I know Lawrence made some good points on this in his Spectator piece, which is that you have David Pocock, who is a key figure in the Australian team, captained the team a number of times, is almost Australia's David Beckham in footballing terms.
And that's a helpful analogy.
Yeah, there you go. Good.
Even I can get that one.
Excellent. Yeah. and he expressed that he wouldn't marry his partner, his now wife, until his gay friends
could
had
do
the same
rights. Right.
So he held out on that and had a very public view on it. You then have a scenario where Qantas, as a major sponsor of the Wallabies, their CEO is gay, and he has made his opinion on it fairly clear. A lot of people asking whether a union that have struggled to compete with other growing sports in Australia have the financial nous to be able to continue going if a major sponsor like Qantas starts to raise questions over their outlook on things.
And that might have influenced Rugby Australia's decision to sack.
Well, therefore,
there's a potential link.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you've got a broader view, which is we want to be inclusive.
Right.
So therefore, casting people outside of the circle is not what we're all about. So on a broader sense, I think that is where Rugby Australia stand. But I do, you know, there were in reading elements of what Lawrence wrote in saying, well, how helpful is it that you have a CEO that is very strong on the homosexuality angle, so you're going to make sure that you fight that cause particularly strongly? Is it appropriate that these people are expressing these views? And there are questions within that debate.
I mean, Lawrence, in that sense, do you think, and again, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but in a sense, I think the feeling is from people, if you like, who are supporting Izzy, is that whether or not you like the way he said it, the big concern is you won't be able to say that kind of thing anymore. And they're concerned about, you know, maybe he did it in a cack-handed way or whatever, but if you hold those views, you will now be seen as a pariah, and you will be persona non grata in whatever field you are, whatever your talent may be, whatever your other qualifications may be.
I think so, and I think actually the court process will be helpful to kind of unpick some of these things. I mean, I remember very well the Asher's Bakery case that I'm sure you'll be aware of, and that kind of went
just for
through
the listening audience, for those who aren't familiar with it.
Absolutely. Yeah, so basically the Asher's Bakery case concerned a Christian bakery in Northern Ireland, and there was a gay man who went in and said, "Will you bake a cake that has a message on it saying support gay marriage?" And they initially took the order and kind of thought about it, I think prayed about it, and said, actually, we're really sorry. We can make you the cake, but we're not going to print that message on it. And the Northern Ireland Human Rights Commission went after them for discrimination. And the Asher's Bakery case said, listen, we are just trying to conduct our business in accordance with our religious beliefs, and you know, we serve everyone, but we're not going to print that message. We're not going to be compelled to say something that we disagree with. And there was a huge amount of criticism of them, everyone saying, oh, you guys are hateful, you're discriminatory. And at first instance, they lost. At the Northern Ireland Court of Appeal, they lost unanimously. And everyone was saying, oh, you know, clearly they're going to lose at the Supreme Court. And you had people like Peter Tatchell come out and actually say, well, initially I came out against them, but I've changed my mind. Because actually what I see here is a broader principle for them to not be compelled to say something that they fundamentally disagree with. Now, that's a distinction here. Izzy's gone out and positively said something. In the Asher's Bakery case, they were being compelled to say something. So I'm not going to try and argue it's the same thing. But the interesting thing was they were still being accused of discrimination. And it took a decision from the Supreme Court of the United Kingdom, unanimous 5-0, to say, guys, this is not discrimination. It does equality law no favors if you start telling everyone what they have to say. And I think everyone, you know, saw that and thought, oh, crumbs. Okay, well, maybe this isn't the kind of hateful, bigoted view that we thought it was. They're just essentially arguing for their own right to kind of exist as they wish. Now, there is a big distinction with Izzy. Izzy has gone out and he's positively said something. And as I say, this will turn on the terms of the contract. Yeah. And it's for the lawyers to argue. I don't think, you know, he has a crack at winning. I'm not convinced that he'll win. But I do think, ultimately, you know, Rugby Australia pressed the nuclear button. It's the proverbial death penalty. They say you will never play in the sport again.
What might be the sporting equivalent of the Ashes case? Because it is different. But I'm thinking, for instance, a lot of players during Pride season will wear the rainbow laces. That's been, to show their solidarity. Yeah. Now, is that something, Nick, as far as you're aware, that is in any way imposed on players, or completely something that they choose or don't choose to do?
They are told that it's rainbow laces season. They will be, certainly within my knowledge of the England rugby team, who I'm fairly close to, they will be provided with enough rainbow laces for the full team and encouraged to wear them if they wish to and whatever.
Now, are there repercussions for anyone who doesn't?
No, although I got myself into a bit of hot water because I was chatting away to one of the England players in the foyer of the hotel ahead of a game over the Rainbow Laces weekend, and I said, oh, are you going to be wearing them? And they said, well, actually, the quality of the lace in the boot isn't that great, so to undo my boots and put these ones on or whatever, you know, I probably won't. Right. And I went away and thought, for a high-profile athlete, and I know that this person is pretty supportive of the LGBT community, I was disappointed.
Right.
And I expressed that in a blog post that was saying, it's a real shame that some England players have decided they can't be bothered. And I then got taken to task saying, that was a bit of an off-the-record conversation we had, and you've portrayed me as someone that wasn't interested. Right. And so I had to hold my hands up and say, okay, look, I got that one wrong. But it sort of, I think he understood the point that I was saying was, well, it would have been nice just to have made a tiny little bit more effort on behalf of the LGBT community.
I mean, let's say someone in principle didn't want to because they didn't actually support the cause, let's say, and that was just their own belief, but they're not out there trumpeting it on social media or anything.
Yeah.
Would it be fair for them to be criticised, say they were the only person in the squad who didn't wear the laces and that people noticed? Would it be fair for them to be criticised for choosing not to engage
no, I don't
in that
think
campaign?
So.
Well, there's an interesting story, I think, in the US, actually, of a female soccer player who didn't wear the rainbow colours on her kit. And I think she's found herself in a lot of hot water because of that. And I think a lot of people have written and said, listen, ultimately, I think we can express our frustration with her and say we wish she understood the cause that we're trying to represent. But we shouldn't be forcing that on anyone. And I think Nick's right. I mean, there's
tolerance goes both ways, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And I was going to say, I mean, to what extent, you know, sport is a massive platform for getting messages out, for, you know, being able to bring people together. People love it. It's often been used as a way for you know, speaking of the diversity and unity and everything else. So inevitably, lots of people want to use it as a platform for their particular campaigns and so on. To what extent do you think, Nick, rugby especially, I suppose, should transcend a lot of those political, cultural, ethical kind of issues? Are there some which are important enough, like the LGBT issue, that actually, yeah, we should be getting a message out there across the board on that, even if it doesn't, like, you know, even if there's lots of other worthy campaigns that may not make it onto the players' football
shoes
or whatever?
I don't think rugby necessarily, or even any areas of sport, need to necessarily pick and choose campaigns to get behind. I think rugby, I was thinking about this today, and it might be a piece I have to write about, because I was thinking that actually rugby prides itself very much on a few particular pillars: respect and fairness, inclusivity. And a lot of these things come down to the fact that it's a pretty abrasive sport. You're tackling someone pretty hard to the ground, but ultimately, once the final whistle is gone, you're having a beer together in the bar afterwards. You're integrated as fans within the stands, unlike football where people are segregated. Sportsmanship is another one of these things. So, and they have these in enormous letters down the corridors of Twickenham Stadium, in the tunnel, everywhere. It's on the LED board. It's absolutely everywhere. And it almost, they're almost the sorts of messages that you see on the walls of churches, in terms of there being nice moral guidance, things we expect from you as supporters, things we expect from you as players. And there's almost a fair parallel between faith and sport.
You go into the average sports stadium and it can be something like a religious experience for many people.
My former headmaster said the most religious experience he's ever had was being in the Millennium Stadium while they were singing Bread of Heaven.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think for a lot of people, it's, you know, it does. But so here's the thing. I'm going back to Folau particularly, because I think we've already talked about the fact that a lot of Pacific Islanders have seen this as an attack on them and on their religion. That's how they've perceived it. And in the same way that Folau's post has been perceived as an attack on people's sexual orientation, they've perceived the response to that to be equally kind of aggressive, and it basically being a clash, and like, right, you're going to lose every time. If there's ever any question of whether, you know, it's your religious values versus kind of the promotion of LGBT values, like, you're going to lose that.
And I'm sure you wouldn't want this, any person from the same background as Izzy or Billy Vinopolo, whoever, to get the message, I am no longer welcome in this sport.
No, absolutely. And just to jump in on that, you know, I put my post out, and within it I said, I can see Billy's put, you know, he's liked that post. We don't know what that means, but in terms of Izzy, is it a nice thing to do? Is it a nice thing to say? And then a lot of people jumped on, I mean, it's the nature of social media, but jumped on my message and started atting Billy Vunipola, saying, absolutely, he should be sacked by England.
Right,
So I ended up writing actually to Billy via Saracens, to his club, to say, you may have seen what's gone out, but I wanted to reach out personally to say, I wasn't calling for this. I don't agree with how you've been treated, because people love to blow these things up and jump into
that's
certain
the
camps.
Nature of social media, unfortunately. Right. We're going to go to final break, and then we'll just have 5 minutes to just conclude our conversation, gents. But it's been a really fascinating one today. We're talking about the sacking of Israel Folau, one of the world's best known rugby players, here on Unbelievable today. And we'll continue the conversation in a short moment.
Believers and non-believers will all be helped, says Tim Keller. A wonderfully clear and accessible case for Christianity from a man who has hosted many of the world's most prominent skeptics and atheists, says Andrew Wilson. Beautifully written, brilliantly argued, will thrill and challenge, says R.T. Kendall. Unbelievable, the book by Justin Brierley. Download a free chapter and find out how it can help you
make the case for Christ. Unbelievablebook.co.uk.
Time for the final part of this week's edition of Unbelievable. And just a reminder that one of my guests on the show today, Lawrence Wilkinson, will be one of the speakers at this year's Unbelievable Conference 2019. He's part of a team from ADF International, one of our conference partners, who'll be there on Saturday, the 20th of July in central London. There's so much going on at this year's conference. It's very hard to sum it up in many ways. If you go to the website, you'll see the whole range of plenary talks, seminars, Q&A panels that are going on throughout the day. There's something for everyone, I think, at this year's conference. But specifically, Lawrence and his colleagues will be speaking on some of those issues around Christian rights and freedoms, especially as regards internationally and here in the UK. And Lawrence in particular is going to be presenting on the subject, Can I Take My Faith to Work? Looking at the case of Israel Folau, gay cakes and religious freedom. So if you enjoy today's show, make sure to get along to the conference and see Lawrence in action, along with others like Ryan Christopher and Lorcan Price, who will be on the bill from ADF International, but loads of other seminars as well and topics and brilliant speakers. We're going to feature a few more of them in coming weeks too. Krish Kandaya is going to be on the show in a few weeks' time, and he's going to be one of our speakers at this year's conference. We're also doing a bit of a youth special on Unbelievable too in coming weeks, where we'll be looking at questions that young people have asked. That's because we're doing a special youth stream at this year's Unbelievable conference, of course. Again, loads of great deals as well. Students, group discounts, free DVD when you book two or more tickets. Get yourself in there now. Unbelievable, the conference 2019. Find it from the Unbelievable webpage at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. Coming up straight after Unbelievable today on the profile, Clifford Hill, an evangelical UK leader, will be sitting down with Sam Hales to talk about his life and faith. And next week on the show, something rather different. We're going to be asking whether Christians need to rethink disability and healing when it comes to their theology. BBC producer Damon Rose, who produced a really interesting documentary as a non-Christian on what it's like to be asked if you would like healing as someone who's disabled, as he is, he's blind. He got a lot of interesting reaction to that and to the article that came out around that too. I'll be talking to him alongside Reverend Zoe Hemming, who's a priest in the Church of England and a wheelchair user, and Reverend Dr. Ian Paul as well, who's a theologian who wrote an interesting response to that article by Damon. So that's our subject next week. Is it time to rethink disability theology? Thanks to all those who've been getting in touch to say they appreciate the show as well. We'll get to some of your feedback a little later on in the show. But just a quick shout out to Joel on Twitter, who said, I'm going to need you to quit hosting these must-watch conversations with the world's prominent thinkers until I can catch up, Justin. Either that, or you're going to need to find me a 25th hour in my day. Thank you very much, Joel. Glad to know that you found us, probably watching some of our Unbelievable debates on the YouTube channel, I imagine. But however you're watching or listening, it's great to know that you've found the programme. We'll have more of your feedback as well to the abortion debate last week as well. That has produced some interesting responses, I can tell you. So listen out for that towards the end of today's show. For the moment, let's get into the final part of today's discussion.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
So as we conclude today's discussion, it's been a bit different. I don't do sports myself, as I said at the outset, but I'm in the company of two big sports fans. They are Nick Heath and Lawrence Wilkinson. Nick is a rugby commentator, member of Sports Media LGBT Network. I'll make sure there's links to his Twitter and everything else you need to know from today's show. And Lawrence Wilkinson from ADF International, who's joining us at this year's Unbelievable Conference to help talk through some of the issues around faith, free speech and that sort of thing. And you can find out more about him at the show page as well, premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. Before we sort of start to wrap things up, I mean, generally speaking, you've been a rugby fan pretty much all your life, I think, Nick. Mm-hmm. You're gay yourself. As far as I'm aware, there are very few out rugby players, though, and far smaller than you might expect from, if you like, national averages and so on.
Sure.
So in your view, is sexuality still a big deal in the rugby playing world?
in that way?
I don't think it is, actually.
Okay.
I was having this conversation over the weekend. I was actually working at the Union Cup, which is Europe's largest LGBT gay rugby tournament, and it was in Dublin. Nigel Owens was refereeing the final, the out gay referee, who's refereed the World Cup final. And, you know, in 2014, there was a bit of homophobic abuse that came from the stands at Twickenham. A lot of rugby fans were surprised. They it's not something you often hear. It's a pretty tolerant and inclusive crowd, rugby generally. Nigel was left a little bit unhappy about it, contemplated whether it was all worth it. Bill Beaumont, the head of the RFU at the time, decided it was important to write him a letter 2 days later on the Monday. Nigel received that, said it brought a tear to his eye, and he picked up the whistle and refereed the following year's World Cup final. And you very rarely hear anything. The only thing you'll hear people arguing about with Nigel Owens is whether he got the decision right rather than anything to do with his sexuality.
Yeah, sure.
And I genuinely think that there's a requirement for more LGBT role models in sport. And I think where years ago people were fearing that they would lose work through not being able to express themselves properly, I think now if you were to come out as a high-level sports person, I think you'd be falling over sponsorship deals, frankly.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So I think there are motivations previously which have inhibited people from expressing themselves. I think now the landscape is such that encouraged is the wrong word, right, but I think could be helpful to those struggling to come to terms with their sexuality or wondering if a sporting environment like rugby is for them that would find it helpful.
Right. Do you have any theory at all on why then, if it is a pretty open and diverse and tolerant place to be gay, there aren't more openly gay players?
Yeah, I don't know. Who knows whether there are, you know, reasons that the average within high-level sport are naturally lower anyway.
Okay,
I don't know. Gareth Thomas was a high-profile gay rugby player, but he came out just after he'd finished playing, glittering career with Wales and the British Lions, an absolutely great player. But again, he was someone that felt only comfortable in doing that.
I suppose there's also that thing of not everyone, someone might be gay, but doesn't want to become the spokesperson for that issue, that be the thing that dominates their life.
Absolutely.
And there's always that danger.
It might be that I'm very happy having my partner over here, but I don't want to have to turn up to every ribbon cutting that's going on up and down the country.
I mean, in a sense, I get the sense from you, Lawrence, that you obviously agree that sports, any place, should be open to people, whatever their sexual orientation and background and so on. But the big question is, are other people being excluded in the process? Who, you know, there's this thing of, you know, the intolerance of tolerance sometimes that's spoken of, and whether the move towards diversity and tolerance and inclusion in some respects are then working against people who, like, for instance, you know, Israel Folau and whoever, who say, but I have to be able to express my views without being, if you like, seen as a bigot or whatever by other people within the movement.
Yeah, and, you know, it is one of those things that actually, as a sportsman, you get a far bigger platform than you might otherwise have, to express your views. And actually, for Izzy, it's an interesting one, because I think as a Christian, he's had the money, he's had the fame, he's had the girls, he's had everything. And he said, listen, all of this for me counts as nothing compared to my faith. And so for him, you know, it's that central identity thing of, like, my career is secondary. And in fact, you know, when he lost that initial tribunal decision, he's like, you know, so be it.
Said words along the lines of, if my career has to go, that's it, my first priority is Jesus Christ. Now, my suspicion is, at some level, even if, you know, if you wound the clock back, he might, and he could foresee what would happen, he might have maybe posted something different or whatever. He's not going to retract that now, because I think he sees it almost as, like, that would be me in some way betraying my faith.
Yep.
And that's the issue, isn't it? That's where
it's come to. I think he feels kind of pushed into a corner. And I think, as I say, I've been really disappointed with the way Rugby Australia have dealt with it. And I think there's more to come. You know, I think as the litigation goes on, like, this is one of the things as a lawyer, you advise your clients, whatever you do, don't get to court. Because if you get to court, then all sorts of stuff comes out in disclosure that you don't want to see come out. And I think there's a lot that's still going to come out in this episode, potentially, you know, emails internally and all the rest. And so I think it's a sad state where basically it's got to the point where they've pressed the nuclear button. I don't think he's ever going to play for the Wallabies again, which I think is a really, really sad situation.
Do you think this is the end of his career, effectively, as well?
Unfortunately, I do. Yes, and I wish he hadn't expressed what he wanted to express in the way that he did, because he's a sensational rugby player. Would I be crazy about going for a beer with him because of what I know he feels? I'm not sure I would, but I would certainly entertain any opportunity to have a discussion with him about it, because I think that's how we all learn and broaden our horizons. I wondered if I could be cheeky enough to ask the two of you a question. Because when we're talking about the tolerance of intolerance, that side of the argument, our understanding of things evolves over time. In the 1970s, there was a sitcom on in the UK called Love Thy Neighbour, which was full of certain phrases which at the time were very racially motivated, and are the sort of phrases that we wouldn't accept or hear
which now look incredibly anachronistic and sort of out of keeping with.
And there are phrases that we used to use about gay people that are no longer used because it's deemed that we've moved on and we've become more understanding of people. And I'm fascinated to talk to people with faith about how, when you have something like the Bible or Christianity as a whole, when there is an evolution of understanding as to what things now mean and how we change our understanding to be more tolerant and understanding of what is the right thing to hear, say, in a 40-year gap, as to how perception of things that have been written a couple of thousand years ago are still held so vehemently to the letter that it means that people like Israel Folau seem to put their beliefs in one particular place that is based on something that old, without updating it to a modern tolerant view to say, okay, this was obviously written at a point where there was maybe not much understanding of this or tolerance, that this isn't wrong, that it's just that it's okay, that love is love, and that should be a more modern view, and that there are plenty of other areas of moral code that the Bible and Christianity are fantastic for. Why can't certain things be moved forwards?
It's one of those things. It's like, well, frankly, it's an inconvenient truth. I mean, Izzy doesn't want to go out there and say that. I don't think no one in their right mind wants to go out there and say, yeah, in my religious belief, someone who's homosexual is going to hell. That's an awful thing for him to be in a position to have to go out and say that. But again, what he's pointing to is a message that's much bigger than all of these things. And as I say, if you look at that kind of specific text from Corinthians, in there are things that everyone loses something in that. And as much as I mean, I hear your point that, okay, so the Bible was written a long time ago, and maybe, you know, as a society we've moved on, that piece that he's written doesn't change. You know, you're not going to be able to interpret that through a new lens of current culture. Like, the Bible's been true for 2,000 years as seen by people who believe it. And the problem is, if we start saying, well, actually, this bit of the Bible is kind of inconvenient, we don't like it, you kind of get to the place where, you know, in China, they say, right, you can have the church, but you just can't believe these things. We're going to censor your Bible, and you can believe this, you can believe that, but you can't believe that. You definitely can't believe this. And it kind of gets to the point, it's like, right, well, are you getting your faith from the Bible? Are you getting it from kind of the cultural norms that we live with? So, I mean, frankly...
See, I'm all by having faith by cultural norms. That sounds great to
me. Sure, yeah. Well, I mean, and that's
fine. Sort of humanist side.
Well, exactly, and I think that's what James Haskell was saying. He's like, James Haskell, being an England rugby player, he's like, there's part of religion that I really get. I think you put the question to him, it's like, or maybe someone else did, but he's like, James, are you religious? He's like, well, I'm not going to say no, because there's parts of it that I really like. I really like the idea that you kind of abide by a code. But what is, he said, that's mad. Like, no ways. And this is the thing for Christians, like, we can't pick and choose. Like, we can't say, well, yeah, we like the part where you clothe your neighbor, but we don't like the part where, you know, frankly, it's uncomfortable for me. And so one of the interesting things, when I was at university, you know, again, fornication's in the list, and I had loads of mates who were sleeping around, and for me, that's simple behavior. I'm not going to change my approach to them, because I'm like, listen, you don't work within kind of the framework, the lens of the gospel, so I'm not going to condemn you for that. I'm going to love you, and you're going to be my mate. I completely disagree with what you do. And as I say, I think, you know, that I can still hold true to my beliefs and, you know, love these guys. And the other thing, I do want to say this, because I think actually I believe the church has been particularly bad on loving gay people. I think that the message, and I don't know how you've perceived it, but I think the message as I've understood it coming is like, you know what, homosexuality is the ultimate sin. Like, if you're gay, like, there is no redemption for you. You are never going to go to heaven. You're toast. And that's absolutely not what the Bible teaches at all. It says that every single person is open, or every single person has the opportunity to get into a relationship with Christ. Now, it does say that Christ comes first, and it means that your life will change. It will look very different. As I say, every single person who reads Corinthians has something to lose. But the suggestion that somebody who's attracted to a man is never going to get into the kingdom of heaven is absolutely wrong. And sadly, I think that's the way that it's been perceived. Sadly, I think that's the way the media have portrayed this whole situation. And I think it's harmful in that sense.
My feeling on it, without inserting my own views on this too much, is just that it's the kind of area where an Instagram post is not going to do justice to the reality of what has been a 2,000-year-long understanding and tradition and theology. And unfortunately, Izzy Falau experienced what most people experience, which is when you try and do things theology via Instagram, it's usually a disaster, especially if you're doing this kind of area. But he kind of has made his bed in that sense, and he's kind of now, I think, seeing it as, well, if this is the hill I have to die on, so be it, because it has become like an issue of this is about my faith now, not simply about this particular issue. It's kind of whether I'm going to be seen as betraying my fundamental principles.
But, yeah, for me, that's still the frustration, because it's not about his faith per se. It's about what he's chosen to express under a code of conduct with his employer. And the key point that by expressing that in that view, young men, young women in Australia might take their own lives. And that's pretty shocking to me.
We're going to have to draw things to a close. Thank you both for such an interesting, engaging discussion on this current situation. Well, obviously, we shall see how this plays out in the future as Israel Folau pursues litigation against Rugby Australia. But for the moment, thank you very much, Nick, for being on the programme today. Lawrence Wilkinson as well for being with me. Perhaps you've got thoughts on this. You're more than welcome to send them in, and we'll be giving you the ways to get in touch with the show in a short moment's time. For the moment, thanks again, guys.
Thanks.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Leave us your feedback by emailing me, unbelievable@premier.org.uk, or send me your thoughts via Twitter, @UnbelievableJB for the Twitter account, or facebook.com/UnbelievableJB for the Facebook page. And I do read any comments that come in underneath programmes, and anything that seems relevant, I'll make sure to include on the show. In fact, this came in as well via our Facebook page. This was Jerry, and he got in touch about a video that we put out probably about 3 years ago now, in fact. It was our How a Dice Can Show That God Exists video. It's my take on the fine-tuning argument. It was just a short video that's gone pretty viral, actually, on YouTube. I think 1.7 million views last time I looked at it. But Jerry was someone who found that at a time when he was sort of struggling with faith in God, and says, a long time no talk, my man. I'm not sure if you remember our chats a while ago, but I reached out to you when I was really struggling in my life. You told me about your book, you gave me advice on what to say to my professor, and much more. But the biggest impact you've had is your dice video. You explained things so simply and clearly and made God make sense. You made God not sound so far-fetched, but the idea of no God sound more unbelievable. That helped me grow closer to God, which in turn turned my life around and changed me forever. Because of that, I've left dice laying all around my house, my car, even my pocket, to remind myself that we're not simply here by a roll of a die. But now I've even taken things up a notch to remind myself of this powerful message. And you've left me an image of the fact that you've had a dice tattooed onto your little finger, something I thought I'd never do, but your video changed my views forever. And you say of that tattoo, brand new, fresh, and there to remind us that there is a God and we all have a purpose. Keep using this gift God gave you. You just never know who you might impact, man. Thanks for everything. Jerry, gosh, I was humbled, thrilled to receive that message. It's been very encouraging to see that video has really gone far and wide, obviously attracting lots of criticism as well, as I inevitably knew it would, but I'm glad that for you it's been such a blessing. Someone else who's recently tuned into the show is Alison over in the USA. Says, wanted to take the opportunity to say how much I enjoy your podcast. A friend of mine recommended to me a few months ago when you released the episode with Raymond Tallis and David Bentley Hart on
Logos Mind and Making Sense of the World. And the show has quickly become one of my favourites, which is saying something. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I especially loved the episode you did on comedy, Christianity and being offensive. Such a timely and truly needed discussion. Plus, there were some good laughs, and what's not to love about that? Your ability to guide the conversations, both big and small, is, for lack of a better term, genius level. And your humility in giving equal voice to all sides, remarkable. So very grateful for your ministry, Justin. There's anything I can do to support you outside of prayer, let me know. Alison, thank you so much. Really lovely to receive that from a new listener to the show. And another one here in Florida, Daniel says, wanted to thank you for all you do. Have learned a lot by listening this last year or so. I consider you, Justin, a brick mason, helping to add support to the foundation of my faith. I'm preparing now for my second attempt at preaching and have decided on an apologetic style sermon. I'll certainly be using some of the things I've heard on your show in my message. You and Premier in my prayers always. Thank you. Gosh, lovely, lovely messages of encouragement. Always nice to receive those. Of course, we've had a mixed response to the abortion debate from last week. That was when Ryan Christopher and Barbara Ntumi joined me. Ryan from ADF International, representing the pro-life position on the question, is abortion a human right? Barbara, also a Christian as it happens, but taking a pro-choice position and the founder of Christians for Choice and part of Abortion Rights. Well, I can tell you there's been some really mixed reviews of that show. Sam said, usually your podcasts are good, but wow, that abortion show was horrible. Complete contrast to the earlier abortion show. I couldn't finish it. Got about an hour in. The pro-choice advocate was unprepared. The pro-life advocate was dishonest. And the host sounded clueless. The way it came off was two pro-life men badgering a pro-choice woman about women's rights. I'm on the fence about abortion, but this show was tone deaf. Thank you very much, Sam. Sorry that it did not meet your approval. This one from Steve Pond, also with criticisms. Steve's a regular listener, got in touch on Facebook on this one, says, let me get this off my chest, Justin. Your moderation, considering the number of programs you've done over the years, is really good. But I'm afraid on this occasion, I felt you entered into the fray so much that you should credit yourself as a guest as also discussing the matter with Barbara. She was looking after herself okay, but it really was two on one. Not fair on her, I felt. I appreciate, of course, your task is never an easy one, and I can't claim I myself would even be able to hold a candle to you as things go. Okay, that's that. Happy to receive feedback, of course, on what I've just written. And you say, disclosure on my position if my daughter ever required an abortion. As a father, I'd want her to have the best and safest care possible. I'm not ashamed of that. It's my position as her father to see she gets it. Hopefully that'll never occur, though. Here's some more feedback to that, though. This one from Peter said, I listened to the show and cannot put it more kindly than to say Barbara Ntumi's contribution was appalling. She has bought into the Western liberal choice is everything narrative so dogmatically that it's ruined her critical thinking on the subject. Her mantras about choice were persistently circular and equivocal. For instance, I lost count of the number of times she'd said Christianity is strongest when we choose, as if the freedom to choose which worldview to subscribe to is in any way equivalent to being free to choose whether or not to follow the moral imperatives entailed by those beliefs. Would Barbara seriously be okay with somebody who said, our Christian faith is strongest when I can choose, so I'm going to choose not to help the poor or not to treat women with respect, and I think I'll also choose to own slaves, commit murder and dump poisonous chemicals in the sea? Obviously not. She even trotted out the old cliche, if you don't want an abortion, don't have one, to which one could easily retort, don't like slavery, don't own one. Not only did she repeatedly beg the question for her own position, she frequently tried to dodge the crucial question of when life begins. The first time it was asked, she said she didn't concern herself with it and deflected the conversation. Further down the line, attempts were made to get her to pin down her principles, which resulted in jaw-dropping sloppiness with her terms. Rights are assigned to people who are here in the world, who are walking, etc. Excuse me, did she just exclude disabled people from having human rights? Finally, it came to whether the baby has made the 7-inch journey out of the birth canal or not. Apparently, that's the difference between being human or not. She might as well have just deferred to the comedian Bill Hicks on this question. You're not a human till you're in my phone book. Of course, this is no laughing matter. To see a Christian arguing in such an intellectually blinded way was not only an embarrassment, but a tragedy. A. Henriksen said, I did hope for an interesting and intellectual debate. I was disappointed. I don't want to be rude to the pro-choice guest, but her arguments were far from convincing. Too much repetition in a not too deep debate.
Liz gets in touch, this is her first time emailing, came to Faith about 4 years ago while studying at Cambridge University. The show has been great for me as I've regularly had doubts about my faith, and the show provides the best forum I've found for delving into issues. I've always considered myself a thoroughly rational person. I came to faith through apologetics and the logical arguments for Christ's resurrection. However, I have come to accept that I'll never be totally certain about everything in my faith, and due to personal circumstances in my life, the problem of suffering causes me the most doubt. But your show has helped me come to realise that's fine, because I'm certain about the central tenets of the Christian faith surrounding Jesus. I've most appreciated the various shows you've had on doubt, because they've helped me to understand that faith and doubt are not in conflict. After all, if we thought we understood everything about God, then that would be a sure sign we've misunderstood something. I also really appreciate the inter-Christian dialogues. Well, you say that's just some background to me, and you wanted to get in touch about the abortion debate. I've never had any strong views on abortion as an atheist, but as a Christian, I'm now strongly pro-life. The recent debate made me quite cross at the constant strawmanning of that position by Barbara, the pro-choice advocate, when she suggested that those against abortion should value every single egg as a potential life, or that we should view those who have miscarriages in the same light as those who have abortions. It simply took my breath away, and to my mind showed that she didn't fully understand the pro-life position. My view is that life begins at conception, and therefore unfertilized eggs do not have the same value, and that the problem with abortion is that it's an active choice to terminate that life, which is totally different to miscarriage. I felt the pro-life speaker in the debate did a good job of outlining the moral difference between different actions. I also feel that the constant reference to a woman having control over her own body misses the point. When having an abortion, you're actively choosing to destroy the body of another human being, and to refer to this as a medical procedure akin to removing a kidney is a view I struggle to understand. The fundamental issue is when life begins, and it was made clear in the programme that the science shows that from conception a baby is fully human. The pro-choice advocates seem to want to avoid engaging on this issue. So much more I could say, but I feel really strongly about, but I'm aware the feedback sections are limited. They certainly are, Liz. So apologies that we can't have any more than that. Kevin in Portland and Nelson in Vancouver, we'll just get time for yours as well. Kevin's is titled Ouch. The last abortion episode was the first episode of Unbelievable where I think you had an irrational guest. Your pro-choice guest just couldn't track with the philosophical objections raised, nor respond to them as discrete premises. You and Ryan tried again and again to lay out logical sequences for arguments from personhood, moral obligation, human rights, etc. But Barbara just went back again and again to the right to choice. I get tired of hearing the choice argument. Does a woman have the right to suicide, illicit drug use, prostitution, etc.? No, not in my country. Anyway, thank you very much. And Nelson in Vancouver says, thanks for the treatment of such a controversial topic. I can't help but feel sick at hearing people debate whether it's acceptable to take an innocent human life. The most telling part of the debate was whenever Ryan pressed Barbara on her views, she ultimately fell back on a certain mantra or article of faith, being ultimately, it's a woman's right to choose. That was the strangest thing to hear. It's an empty slogan that exposes the bankruptcy of the abortion argument. It's a slogan immune to science, logic, and reason. Human life should be protected, and no one has a right to end it. So there you go. A number of those, obviously, in the end, coming down against Barbara's position. A few people who supported her. Always welcome to hear your feedback on any show, including today's, of course. I'm sure we'll be hearing what you made of the programme on Israel Folau as well. Do email in unbelievable@premier.org.uk or send me your tweets via @unbelievablejb, facebook.com/unbelievablejb. If you want to get in touch via Facebook, all of those links and links to my guest today and how to get hold of tickets for Unbelievable, the conference 2019, all available from the show page as ever at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. Coming up on the profile next, it's Clifford Hill talking to Sam Hales. And let me tell you what to expect on next week's edition of this show. You're unbelievable. We'll be asking whether it's time to rethink disability theology next week. It's on the back of a really interesting BBC Radio documentary and article by Damon Rose, who himself is blind, in which he recounts his own experiences as a non-Christian being asked for prayer for healing out of the blue by Christians. Reflecting on that alongside him is Reverend Zoe Hemming, who's ordained in the Church of England and is herself a wheelchair user, and Reverend Dr. Ian Paul, who's a theologian who's going to be reflecting on the article and documentary. Really interesting discussion for you, same time next week. Don't forget, you can get today's show on video as well by going over to the website and clicking through to the YouTube channel. For the moment, though, thanks very much for being with me on today's show, and see you next time.
You've been listening to the Unbelievable podcast. Help others find the show by rating and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts from. And discover more shows from Premier at premier.org.uk/podcasts.